You are listening to the cycling podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 12, today we're in Bagnères de Bigorre.
Just a quick story about what's going on around the Barin Merida bus. Media scrums are part of the Tour de France, and this one is pretty funny. Like, there's a mechanic coming out, everybody's kind of piling up, trying to get insight on what's happened at the Barin Merida with Rohan Dennis today. Everybody has his own idea on the story. There are rumors about Dennis's bike not being suitable for, you know, what he wanted to do today. Others mention internal problems within the team or health problems. We have no idea. But once again, you know, in the scrum, one of my favorite journalistic exercises.
I don't know. I know the same as you guys. I don't know. So I was behind the breakaway. I was focusing on the race in front. So I don't know. Sorry.
We are also confused. Let's say that I am disappointed about what happened with Rohan today, because actually we expected big effort from him tomorrow. It was his decision today to stop on the fit zone. We try to speak with him. We stop also with the car and try to find a solution, what's going on. And he say, I don't want to talk, and just abandon the race.
Well, we're played in there by a thoughtful Francois Thomazeau outside the Barin Merida team bus.
Yeah, because it was fun, because it was back. You know, we like to be in a media scrum on the Tour de France, part of the thing, and it reminds all these, you know, memories of, the doping scandals, and there's always a story like that, a kind of a mystery or a rumor spreading, and you see all of us like flies flying around an old piece of meat or something, and that's us, you know, that's. And I find it funny.
The man at the centre of it was nowhere to be seen, Rohan Dennis. We heard Tristan Hoffman, his sports director, who, as he said, was in the car following the breakaway today, so he didn't really know. Rohan Dennis climbed off mid-stage one day ahead of the time trial. He's a world time trial champion. He would have been a favourite, if not the favourite, for the stage in normal circumstances. He rode very well at the Tour of Switzerland just before the Tour de France. He's been quiet here so far. And today climbed off, and it's shrouded in mystery, isn't it?
It is. All sorts of rumours, none of which have really been confirmed. Rumours of a heated discussion at the start on the Barin Merida team bus. Was that about team tactics today? Was it about the preparations for tomorrow's time trial? We know that Rohan Dennis is a pretty fastidious guy. He's a very demanding, you could say probably a perfectionist.
Can be fiery too.
Can be a fiery character, yes. And we heard also from the Barin Merida sports director, Gorazd Dengeli, who was kind of forced to be in the centre of that media scrum. I was actually very kind of in the right place at the right time, because I was standing next to the wall, exactly where a little croissant shaped bit of space had opened up, and Stangeli came into the middle, and he really didn't give much away about what had happened. He denied that there'd been any kind of falling out. He didn't deny that Dennis was unhappy with the bike or the skin suit, which was one of the rumours. But of course, he's in a very difficult position there, because Merida is the co-sponsor of the team, and teams very, very rarely want to place the blame for anything on the suppliers of the bikes or the kit. We wondered whether Dennis had been ill. We know there's been a little bit of illness in the Barin Merida camp, and Vincenzo Nibali has not been at 100%. We wondered whether, and this is where it gets kind of difficult for us, I think, we wondered whether there's even a kind of a mental health aspect to this, and whether Stangeli was asked whether that was a factor. All we really know is that Dennis is out of the tour and abandoned in really strange circumstances.
And there was something rumbling. Well, we will get on to talk about the stage in a moment, but and we'll return to this a bit later on. But Francois, you witnessed him this morning as well, acting strangely.
Yeah, because he came to the podium and he talked to our colleague Sophie Smith, and like he was going to take part in the stage today and take part in the time trial tomorrow. He actually talked to her about you know, the tomorrow's time trial. And then he came to the rest of us journalists at the podium, the start podium, and he said, he told Seb Piquet, he's a very good friend of Seb Piquet, it has to be said, and he told something like, you know, count me out, which sounded very strange. And Seb told me straight away, I don't know, it's something odd about what Dennis told me. So obviously there was already a crisis at that stage, and we can from that probably think that it was at the back of Ron Dennis's mind, the idea that he might pull out was already there.
And midway through the stage, Dennis arrived back at the Bahrain Merida team bus in a team car. Well, came out of the bus with his agent, Andrew McQuaid, and they walked away into the area by the podium and away from the Tour de France. And so, whatever the circumstances, it's sad for the race to lose the world time trial champion on the eve of the time trial in Po tomorrow.
But lots else happened today, Lionel, including a very clinical win at the finish in Bagnères de Bigorre. Can you give us a tale of the étape?
Well, I'd argue not a lot else happened today, really, but
Some stuff happened.
Stage 12 from Toulouse to Bagnères de Bigorre, 209.5 kilometres. One non-starter this morning, Jasper Philipsen, the youngest rider in the race, UAE Team Emirates sprinter / lead-out man.
Youngest rider not in the race.
Yeah, the two non-finishers today were Rowan Dennis, as we've heard, and Giacomo Nizzolo of Dimension Data. And there was a huge 40-man break that contained a lot of big names. Too many to mention here. We're not going to do a blow-by-blow and read out the names of a quarter of the peloton, but Bora Hansgrohe and Sunweb had four riders. AG2R, Bahrain Merida, Lotto Soudal, EF Education First had three, and in all 19 of the 22 teams had someone in the break. And then when we reached the first of the two big climbs, a Perisord, Lilian Calmejan of Total Direct Energy was away alone, and then before the final climb, La Horquette, Dunsey San, Simon Clark of EF Education First was alone at the front, but he was caught and passed by Matteo Trentin, and then a very strong looking trio of Simon Yates, also of Mitchelton Scott of course, Pello Bilbao of Astana, and Gregor Mühlberger of Bora Hansgrohe surged to the front. They descended to the finish, and in the town, Yates went to the front just as they reached the final bend and unleashed a sort of track sprint to net Mitchelton Scott's second stage win of the tour. Almost 10 minutes behind, Ineos and Luke Rowe in particular set a moderate but good pace on the two climbs, and nothing much else happened because tomorrow we have the time trial in Po, and I think no one really wanted to deaden their legs before that.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa. And it's almost time for Pedler de Charme once again. We awarded the week one Pedler de Charme t-shirt to Michael Morkov last week. We were sent a picture of him relaxing on the rest day in his Pedler de Charme t-shirt. Didn't spot that stain that we thought might have been on the front, Lionel, but that was fortunate. We've got unstained t-shirts to give out to riders this week and next, and maybe an overall winner as well. Keep your nominations coming in. We've got Marcus Burghardt, a strong contender at the moment. Who else? Have been other contenders as well.
Well, listeners, keep the nominations coming. If you see anyone doing anything charming or hear of anything, any charming behaviour, let us know by telling us on Twitter at @cycling_podcast.
Or you can email us, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com, and we'll be giving one of the wonderful Rafa Pedler de Charme t-shirts. They are also available at rafa.cc.
Well, we've moved away from the bar we were sitting outside because the really quite noisy air conditioning unit just above us. It's quite a warm day. It's not the hottest day of the tour ever, is it? But the aircon was on.
Quite a cool day for most of the day. Yeah. Mm. And I'll tell you who was cool today. Simon Yates in the finish. The three of them came in to Bagnères de Bigorre. And, you know, it was a hard one to call because Mühlberger is second Tour de France, still quite a young rider. And we heard from him the other day in our Kilometre Zero. On the rest day, well, about the rest day, he's good rider, great prospect, second in a Sage of the Dauphiné to Julian Alaphilippe, and rode very well today. But Simon Yates really showed all his canniness today. I think on the climb when he was away with Mühlberger, Pello Bilbao put in a big effort to bridge across to them, almost got on. He was like two bike lengths behind them when Simon Yates attacked. and just made it a lot harder for him to get up there. So that was a good in terms of a good tactical play by Yates. And then coming into the finish, I mean, everybody knew that there was this corner with 150 metres to go. Mühlberg at the finish seemed to think that going around that in second would be the optimal position, but Yates was absolutely clear that he had to be first into that corner. He sat at the back. You know, the other two just didn't seem to have the assurance that Yates had. And, you know, as well as being a good climber, a Grand Tour winner, he's a fast finisher as well. He's a former points race world champion. So it was set up perfectly for Yates, and he was clinical in finishing it off.
I mean, I don't think there was any doubt, really, that Simon Yates would be the stronger of the three there. I mean, Bilbao won two stages at the Giro, remember, earlier this year, so not to be underestimated. I didn't know an awful lot about Mühlberger's finishing in a situation like that, but Simon Yates, it just looked so calm and collected, didn't he? Letting the other two look at him, and he was just sitting at the back, biding his time and getting into that final corner first and finishing it off very well, completely taking the pressure off Adam Yates all day as well. That's the other thing. We've had this debate in the car, and we've also asked, well, we heard Darrell Impey talking about it in yesterday's Outside the Team Bus. Having somebody up the road, we always think, well, because we're comparing to Team Sky, now Team Ineos, and how they approach the Tour with really only one objective, which is to win the race overall, we compare everybody to that. But actually, Mitchelton Scott, by winning a stage the other day and then again today, it gives Adam Yates a kind of free ride in the peloton. The only question would be, if he does need to call on support later in the race, will these efforts add up? Will they compromise his chances? But at the moment, we don't know that. And with the Tour de France, you have to make hay while the sun is shining, don't you?
I was talking to to Pascal Chanteur the other day, who was involved in the Riders Trade Union and who was also a rider in the day, and he was telling me, you know, the kind of old school cycling has died. There's new strategies, new tactics, new approaches every year, and one of the new tactics, which has now become almost a tradition in the last 5 or 6 years, and made actually Simon Yates' victory to the highly predictable. Why do you take Simon Yates on the Tour de France? Nominally to help Adam Yates, and we've seen him dropped every single day in the first week. I mean, it was obvious that the plan was, you know, save as much energy as you can. Help Adam in the mountains when need be, and when will Adam need help? Probably in the Alps. That's when the highest altitude will be coming, and we know the both Yates brothers are pretty good in altitude. And in the meantime, you know, lose as much time as possible, and if you have a chance, go for a stage win. So for me, when I knew Simon Yates this morning was in the break, and when you attacked in La Hourquette dans 6 ans, the name of the winner, you know, they didn't make any doubts. I was very confident that this would be the winner. I mean, so in a way, everybody knew that Simon Yates one day would go for a stage win, or, you know, could have predicted that he would do it. But it's one thing to predict or forecast that, you know, someone is going to do it, and it's another thing to do it. And the great thing about Mitchelton Scott, that tour so far, is that, you know, what they have planned to do, they've done it.
Simon Yates has completed the Grand Tour set today, just as Caleb Ewan did yesterday. Let's hear from a man that we don't often hear from, because he's the driver of the second team car for Mitchelton Scott. Matt White, of course, very familiar voice to our listeners. He kind of had a day off, really, because what happens is when the brake goes up the road, the second team cars go to follow the brake, and the first team car stays with the team leader. So
Dave McPartland
was in the team car behind, and, well, this is what he said at the finish.
Difficult to pull it off, but got goosebumps at the moment. The boys started the day, had a plan to try and put one of our bigger guys in with one of our climbers. It actually happened exactly like that. But
on the climb, when Bilbao was coming across to Yates and Mühlberger, just as he was about to get on, Yates just accelerated a little bit, and we saw there that kind of cold-blooded, calculated racing ability that he's got.
Both Simon and Adam, you know, are both very calculative riders and quite cunning, and you know, they've got a good track background, and I think we saw that today also in the finish. He knows very well what he can output. He can can put out, and you know, never went over the top. It managed his workload all the way to the finish really well.
The man whose company Mitchelton is in the team name, the man who has founded the team and owns the team and bankrolled the team since it started, Gerry Ryan, arrived in France today, and this was his reaction at the finish.
Last year, Simon Yates won the Vuelta. It was the first Grand Tour victory for the team. How did that make you feel?
To win a big stage, and if you look at it, it's only five teams. fantastic, hey?
They're like your boys, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and to see that come home, and you know, as I said, in 5 years, I think there's only four teams that have won the tours. But you know what? For him to come back today, and I said to him, you deserve to win today, and he's here riding for his brother, so more to come. So I've just arrived today, so that's pretty special, you know. One day in, a stage wins. Disappointed I missed Darrell's, but I certainly watched it on TV.
You've got racehorses as well, haven't you? Is there any similarity between the pedigree racehorses and the pedigree cyclists?
Yes, there is, but also you need a bit of luck with both, and you know, a lot of hard work, and the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Which is the most expensive, the riders or the horses?
The team is.
I mean, you bankrolled this team. It's been your project right from the start, and you know, your company's name has been prominent throughout, really. You know, do you ever get a moment of thinking how much money you put into it, or is it something that just gives you so much joy on days like today that it's all worth it?
Well, there's no pockets and shrouds, so I can't take it with me, and call it an investment, because I look at the joy that brings people, not only back home, but around the world. I'm sure that our fan base in Great Britain will be celebrating tonight.
Well, that was going to be my last question. There's no holding back when you've got a couple of Poms leading the team?
You know what? We don't care where they come from, as long as they're a great team member and can contribute, and you know, they all do.
Did they apologise for the Cricket World Cup result?
We haven't got into cricket. I let them focus on today, but I'm sure over dinner tonight, and I brought some Mitchelton special Mitchelton wine out of my cellar, personal cellar, and I've got those to put on the table tonight.
So it sounds like Gerry Ryan wants to have a little word about the cricket result with the Yates brothers at some point, maybe over a very fine glass of wine from his own personal cellar.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's Seb Piquet reminding us to tell you that tonight's episode in our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by Wattbike. Both of us, Lionel, took delivery of the Wattbike Atom in between the Giro and the Tour, and used it a lot. Last night we heard about the pedalling effectiveness score, which I was given, or pedalling ineffectiveness score in my case. And I spoke to Barney Wainwright, who actually developed this PES for Wattbike, and it's fascinating bit of information that you get about your pedalling efficiency. Here's what he told me about it.
The pedalling effectiveness score itself, you don't get the best score if you just pedal in a circle, as it were, if you apply equal force all the way around the pedal stroke. So the score itself, the value you get, the way you optimise that is actually by putting the majority of the emphasis on kind of the downstroke and the pulling back stroke and a little bit of up pull on the back. And if you're doing that both on the left and right in a nice transitional sense as you move from one pedal stroke to the next, that's how you kind of maximise the score. We don't do any manipulation of the data itself. The data is just the force you apply. It's just how we're kind of rewarding you in terms of a score. So what we try and get people to do is have as a high number as possible, but really trying to put a ceiling on 80, because once you get above 80, that's when you would be having to put a big emphasis on pulling up a lot in the pedal stroke, or just as much up as you would be pushing down, which obviously from a physiological point of view and from a maximizing power perspective is not the best thing to do.
Tomorrow night we'll hear more from Barney, who will explain how you can improve your pedalling effectiveness score by using the Wattbike Atom and then translate that into gains when you're cycling out on the road. If you'd like to buy a Wattbike Atom, you can go to www.wattbike.com/TCP100, that's TCP100, and if you buy before the end of July, you will also get £100 of Sigma Sport vouchers with every Wattbike Atom purchase. So go to wattbike.com/TCP100, and when you check out, use the code TCP100.
Well, there was a bit of a truce today, predictably, really, with the time trial tomorrow in particular, and it was a stage with two pretty tough climbs, but not one that was necessarily going to force splits in the among the favourites. You know, why would any of them waste energy today with the time trial tomorrow? Quite a long way from the final climb to the finish, and also the time trial tomorrow, which is obviously very, very important.
Our colleague David Walsh, as we were outside the press room after the stage, made quite a good point, saying that the severity of the climbs is only important if they race them. And so today, yes, they've ridden the Perisord, which is tough. They've ridden La Orquette d'Ancizan, which is also tough. But they've ridden them at a fairly comfortable pace. I mean, not to take anything away from Luke Rowe at all, but if Luke Rowe was marshalling things all afternoon, that gives you an indication of what sort of pace was on. It wasn't full gas, as they say.
But I wonder if they'd swapped it around and had the time trial today and this stage tomorrow, what a different prospect it might have been.
I think the design of the course was too clever there for once. You know, obviously the idea to have this mountain stage kind of quite a classic one, then an individual time trial, then a finish up at Le Tourmalet, classic climb of the tour, and the next day a more nervous stage for finishing at the small, but the idea was obviously to test every capacity of the climbers and non-climbers. They would almost have to change bikes every day of the weekend, and it was a little bit too clever, because I mean all the teams were aware that the idea was to, as we say in French, casser les jambes, to break the legs, but it turned out that they refused to play this game. They refused to make an effort today. They say, okay, you want us to change bikes? Well, we won't. You know, today we'll take a little, not rest, because I mean it's never a rest on the tour, but a kind of warm up session before tomorrow time trial. We'll do the time trial full gas, and then the real battle will probably start on the Tourmalet.
Well, in the absence of a story from the GC contenders, that's probably why there was so much focus on this peculiar story with Rowan Dennis and the scrum around the Bahrain Merida bus. And certainly when I was there in the afternoon and seeing Dennis come out with his agent, Andrew McQuaid, who we know reasonably well, don't we, Rich?
Well, not well enough that he's answering his phone now.
Well, no, but I think they certainly the Dennis camp reluctant to comment or add any clarification to what's gone on today, and Bahrain Merida kind of fighting a bit of a fire there, really not really sure what to say. It wasn't like in that scrum they'd come up with a line that they could then issue. They stood and took questions, which was quite a refreshing but also a pretty catastrophic PR strategy, really. When you come out and there's 50 guys, all 50 guys and women, all wanting to ask questions, you go on the front foot and say your piece and say this is what's happened. And I mean, I'm not saying lie, obviously, but come up with some kind of explanation, because we're still none the wiser as to what's happened. And it invited all of the questions that they will not have wanted. Somebody asked whether it was to do with doping. Somebody asked whether it was to do with his mental health, which is not something that really should be discussed in a kind of open forum. But if they had controlled the situation better and given the media something to feed on, it might have just made things a little less uncomfortable for them outside the bus this evening.
He went to the point, I mean, and that's what made it interesting, that at a stage during when he actually gave up, the rumor that spread around the press room was that he had vanished. Like, he was like a lady vanishes, a rider vanishes, because we knew he had abandoned, which meant some commissaire had written down, taken his bib away from him. And from then on, where was he? You know, he was lost. And even in the race, the French TV, they tried to get to Tommy Vockler, tried to get to Tristan Hoffmann, who said, we don't know. We don't know why he abandoned. We don't know where he is. And so for a while, for like 2 hours almost, Ron Dennis had gone. He disappeared. And then he reappeared at the team bus at the finale. But it added a little bit of tension, of suspense. Can you imagine that? It's like a crime movie or something. A rider vanishes,
Well, especially when it's the world time trial champion on the eve of the only individual time trial in the race. And it means that he doesn't get to wear the rainbow jersey in a
Tour de France time trial. There's been no indication that his form is bad. We just don't know enough about the situation to even make an informed guess at what's gone on. But clearly, that team is in a suffering from an uncertainty. It's in a sort of limbo. We know that Rod Ellingworth will be starting work with them towards the end of the year. My suspicion is that the staff on that team will be, if not immediately, certainly over a period of months or the first year, will change absolutely dramatically, and probably for the better, I would say. But for the riders as well, you know, Vincenzo Nibali is sort of serving his notice, isn't he? He's off to Trek Segafredo. Yeah. And it looks like a team that's kind of floundering about a bit. There's no one holding the oars, and there's a crack in the bottom of the boat.
Yeah, to kind of defend Baron Merida just a little bit, because I mean, their team director made it clear during the press conference that they were not in a position to say anything, because they haven't actually talked to Ron Dennis since his withdrawal from the tour. So maybe probably they want to have an explanation. It sounds like it could be a tough, well, even a rough, discussion. But they'll probably come up with an official statement when, after they've discussed with. Because I mean, if he really, you know, just walked out of the tour because of a disagreement with the team, there could be sanctions. I mean, it's not something you do. You know, you're not step out of the job just because you don't like what the boss is doing. So we'll see.
It's like Richard just downing his microphone for, on a whim.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. And if you want 25% off all their sports nutrition products, go to scienceandsport.com and enter the code SISCP25. Don't forget also the Science and Sport competition. They are exclusive nutrition providers to Team Ineos, of course, and they're offering a day in the team car at either the Vuelta or the Tour of Britain. Includes two nights accommodation, transport, and £400 spending money. Lots of good runners-up prizes as well. Go to scienceandsport.com/signup to enter that wonderful competition. We're also running our own competition to win the Atto folding bike, the Austin Cycles Atto folding bike, which has come into its own a little bit the last couple of days, and tomorrow certainly will, because tomorrow is La Course, the women's race in the morning, and I'm going to be heading into that, into Po, on my bike. We're going to do a bit of videoing with it as well, aren't we, Lionel, tomorrow?
We certainly are.
So looking forward to riding around Po on the bike tomorrow. To stand a chance of winning the bike, go to thecyclingpodcast.com, sign up to our newsletter. And when you get the newsletter, or if you're already a subscriber, just click on the link through to Austin Cycles and enter the reason why you should win it. Just one more here. Clayton Davis has written a Lionel-esque limerick. Oh. There once was a podcast from Britain that became a mandatory listen. With cycling rumour, wit, wisdom and humour, my very first show I was smitten.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I think you're the winner, Clayton. No. That is very nice. Very nice indeed. David Griffin says, may I paraphrase a passionate Frenchman? The Austin Cycles Atto is a lifestyle. If you don't understand that, you should not be riding one. Francois, you're barred from the competition. If that's you, just under a false name.
How did you find out it was me?
Anyway, what else have we got? Well, we've got, of course,
Outside the Team Bus. Oh, you don't need me saying that, do you?
No, just go straight to it.
Outside the Team Bus with
Natne Brane. My team is from Team Cofidis.
A few days ago, just before the rest day, I wanted to speak to you before the start, but you were in another world. And then when I got back to the car, I heard you were in the break, and I understood why. Yeah. Were you focused on getting in that break?
It's not because of I want to take on the position on the first of the part, and then on the last time he came to me, and then that's why I was, for the position, for the going to the breakaway is really important. That was sorry for that, but obviously we needed to be in the first part of for the line to go in the break, so that's why I went. And anyway, now we had it.
Well, we understand you're here to race, obviously. How to be in that first break, do you have to get to the start line and be right behind the where the jersey holders line up?
Yeah, we start on the line in the position to go if we want to go in the breakaway for sure. Sometimes, you know, they're going to close the which teams they want to control or something with that, maybe can do it. So that way we've been in the first part for that.
So do you look to see which other riders are there and think maybe he will go or he would be good to be in a break with?
Honestly, we sometimes yes, but most of the times you need to be in the first if you want to go. Sometimes it's right by yourself or you wait some seconds to be to start somebody.
Just before the tour, you went home to Eritrea. The national championships were in your home city. Yeah. Did you know you would be in the Tour de France before you went back to Eritrea?
Yeah, normally we were on the long list, 14 riders, and then after that, I was hoping to win the national championship, especially if I will come to Tour de France. I really wanted to be national championship for that. I was a little bit stressful before the race. I really wanted to win that to give me more motivation, extra power for upcoming the tour. I get the chance, I win. I'm so really happy of that also. And then that what my planning is going well for national championship.
What's the national championship road race like in Eritrea?
You know, in all the world, it's important when you win national championship. And then in Eritrea, it's, you know, obviously it's one of the best sport and then first sport in our country. It's like a culture, you know, it's a really famous sport in Eritrea. And then all the people, they are seeing us for us once per year during national championship. And then they are so excited to be with TC for us and then to race in there. And then I'm so really happy that I've been in a national championship also.
Cycling in Eritrea is very popular, we know, because when Daniel Tekle Heimanot had the King of the Mountains jersey in 2015, it was a big story. You were racing in the Tour of Austria when he was in the polka dot jersey, I think. But were you in contact with him at the time? Did you talk together?
Yeah. Normally we are so close friends with Daniel. We were in Center Mondial 2011 together, and then after we went for 3-4 years with MTN and Dimension Data. We were same team, and then until last year we were living together in Lucca, so not we are not so far in Lucca, like 1 kilometer, 2 kilometer away. So we training so much with Daniel, also met Daniel, Merhawi, Amaniel, Maxev, everyone dot riders. We are close in Lucca. And then we training in Eritrea in Asmara also together sometimes. So we are so friendly, closely, and then we had all the time in contact until now. So we are so closely friends also.
You had a very good week in Austria that week. I think you were in the top 5 overall.
Yeah.
But also a rider racially abused you in that race as well. I mean, I that was a story at the time. I wonder what the attitude in the peloton is like now.
Doesn't matter, you know, it's I'm black, the other people is white, it doesn't change. We are all people, we born in 9 months, so we are the same. I'm African, I come to represent Africa. Yes, I know, that's, I'm so happy and I'm so proud of that.
Joining Cofidis this year, has it given you a different impression of how cycling teams are? Because of course you were with Dimension Data before. Has it been different riding in a French team?
I was with French team before in 2013-14 when I turned pro, and then I was with Europe Car. I had a really great time, and then after that I went to MTN. I wanted to be with my friends, with Eritrean people, to stay with them, to train with them. Sometimes you need it close to you. When I come to Europe, when I come to French team in Europe Car, when I come to Europe Car, that's... I was alone, I was in Leicester, and then that's why I chose to change a little bit to go with the friends. But anyway, I've been there for 4 years, and then now I come to the French team.
Lastly, you have a very distinctive jersey. It's a very beautiful jersey. Will we see it in a breakaway again before we reach Paris?
Yeah, obviously, yeah. It's my target is to go to breakaway. From now, I will see most of the days I will go to the breakaway. I know it's hard to be to win the mountain jersey or something, but why not? We're going to try. We had some good points. Before yesterday, I got one podium, my first Tour de France podium. That's awesome. And then before the rest day, it gave me an extra energy, and then I'm extra motivated for the upcoming racing to the Tour, to the second part of the Tour.
You have the red number, of course.
Yeah, today I had red numbers for the competitive rider. So yeah, today obviously a little bit I would like help to that my teammate for Gigi if we can pass for the sprint or something. But upcoming days on the mountains, I will try to go in the breakaway to get some points and then to search some top three to finish in the top mountains.
Well, Lionel, he could run, but he couldn't hide. He couldn't escape you forever, could he?
No, no. And he's not been in the break since I spoke to him. So, oh dear, maybe I put the curse on poor Behani.
Oh, well, very interesting anyway. I mean, outside the team bus feature continues to thrill and entertain.
Yeah, no, he's a good guy. I'm glad you did the Natnail Birani. I saw him win the Tour of Turkey a couple of years ago, and he appeared to me as a very gifted and nice and polite and really, really great guy. So yeah, good choice.
Who's in your sights tomorrow, Lionel? Well, who have you got in the crosshairs?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? On a time trial day, it will be a case of when I'm around the team bus and who catches my eye. It'll be interview at first sight.
I was at the EF Education First bus tonight at the finish, and Mike Woods was in a pretty bad way. He crashed yesterday and went off for an x-ray at the finish, really struggling to move. Didn't look great at all for him. It's a short stage tomorrow, of course, but a time trial is not going to be easy for him on a time trial bike. It didn't look good for him at all. I spoke to Tom Southern, their sports director, about the time trial. It's an interesting one because the La Course is on the same course in the morning. The women do five laps, and that means that the window for recceing the course is quite small. There's about an hour and a half where riders can pass through the start in an hour and a half window. So that's their opportunity to go and take a look at the course. There's quite a lot of riders still in the race, which means that window is a little bit smaller. One or two abandons in the last couple of days, of course, but you know, Rigoberto Urán lost that time in the crosswind stage, so he's a bit back overall, but they say that he's in very good shape and still looking forward to the time trial and the final week. But you, Francois, spoke to somebody who knows the course very well.
Yeah, I talked to Nicolas Portal, the of course, team director of Team Ineos, and well, he should know the course well because he lives in Pau, he's from Pau, so he's back home, you know, and I'm sure he had lots of information to give the Team Ineos riders, you know, when the tour course was announced in October, and since then, you know, I'm sure lots of recons, videos, you know, they've probably checked the course already a couple of times, and so anyway, everything he had to say about it, and also the interesting thing he said is, you know, we might think that the time trial could have been one of the stages where the difference between Bernal and Thomas might appear, but he said exactly the opposite. He said the course being what it is, it suits them both. So yeah, still an uncertainty, and maybe the time trial won't change anything.
You'll be at home, Nicolas, so I suppose you know this parkour very well.
Yes, that's some road that I've been training for a long time ago and quite a lot. I know the time trial very well, yes.
What are the main characteristics of this time trial, in your opinion?
Well, also in general, it's sweet both, you know, it's with specialists, and it's sweet also some climbers, who they are not too bad on the GT, and so I think in general you will set let's say the pure climbers, they are not really super special on the GT, like Bardet or Willows. If they are in good form, they go the right pacing, they should lose less time than if it will be totally flat. Then there's still three climbs. The first one is quite hard, and it's two small valleys where you go across, and obviously you want to have the right pacing. If you go too hard on the first one, on the second one, and you start to blow, then all the way back, when you have to push on the flats until the finish, more or less, you're not going to be that fresh. So the pacing is going to be it's going to be really important.
So more for Geraint or more for Egan?
I think both. I mean, both of them. Both they are good time trialists. Egan is pretty good. He's been national champion. He's done some really good TT. Obviously, advantage of G. is clearly a better time trialist than Egan, but Egan done some, he's been beating some of the specialists in Swiss and also in Paris-Nice, so and he was a national champion last year. So yeah, he's doing well. It's all about pacing. If you pace yourself well, then you know you're gonna get the best of yourself. You cannot go faster than what you can do, obviously. And so, I think for pure climbers, sometimes it's hard for them to pace on a flat, on a downhill, and on the uphill. So, but Egan is pretty good at this.
Yeah, interesting. I think we expect a pretty strong performance from Geraint Thomas tomorrow. Another thing David Walsh was saying to us this evening, Lionel, was he was wondering whether Team Ineos / Team Sky had ever really had it so easy in the first almost 2 weeks of the Tour de France. Now, the course is very backloaded, and the real tests are obviously to come. But it's been a very sort of gentle run-in to this final sort of 8-9 days. And yeah, I'm sure the riders won't all agree with that. But, you know, it's been noticeable, and it was again today, that if you look at it, there only seems to be one team here to win the Tour de France. I mean, everybody else is hedging their bets. You've got Mitchelton Scott now with 2 stage wins, which is great for them. You've got Astana finally today putting a rider up in the break, Peo Bilbao, who's one of their strongest riders in the mountains. And it does look like every other team is hedging their bets. No other team has got this singular focus behind a leader.
Well, maybe Groupama FDJ with Thibaut Pinot.
That's a good point.
And Movistar as well. They didn't try anything, but yeah, mind but you, they never
Movistar
try anything.
they have the confusion. I mean, their strategy is so opaque. I mean, Valverde's move on the stage to La Planche des Belles Filles was, well, it was self-sacrifice, and it's ruled him out of the being one of the three. So, but they do still have Quintana and Landa reasonably well placed.
Well, I mean, not Landa, he's lost a lot of time now.
Yeah, 4:15, but Landa, we know, is always quite comfortable coming from behind. He's gonna gain time, isn't he, and move up the overall. But the thing about Thomas and Bernal is only 4 seconds separate them at the moment. What if I had to say, I know I hate speculation, so I'm not going to answer my own question, but what will be the time gap between them tomorrow?
25 seconds.
In Thomas's favour?
Can't tell you.
That's the point. That's the point. I mean, Bernal showed in the Tour de Suisse as well. He could ride, you know, very good time trials. He won Paris-Nice. There was a very, bumpy time trial there, and he did well. So, no, it's not to be discounted. They might be pretty close, actually.
I think Thomas will take a bit of time out of him, sure. In all seriousness. But I think maybe up to 30 seconds, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, in that Paris-Nice time trial, which Simon Yates won.
Absolutely.
Bernal was sixth, only 15 seconds behind Yates. I mean, similar sort of distance, and it was not a dissimilar course, was it, in the terms of its,
absolutely,
lumpy. So that's an interesting comparison. What about Julian Alaphilippe? Because I referenced his Dauphiné time trial last night. He surely is... He's got enough of an advantage to
he'll
to
keep
stay
he'll
in
keep
yellow.
The jersey. Yeah, I'm sure. My take. I mean, we already discussed that. And to me, the big test, and I think he knows it, is the Tourmalet.
Satisfied nods all round. There, we've nailed it. We know exactly what's going to happen tomorrow, and then tomorrow's podcast.
Let's take the next few days off.
We'll start with apologising for the list.
La Course less predictable. Although my tip for La Course is Maren Vos after her stage-winning exploits at the Giro Rosa. On what is quite—I mean, it's going to be an interesting little glimpse of the time trial course. The women riding it 5 times, and yeah, it sounds like from Nicola Portal's words as well. You know, it sounds like a sporting course, which I think the form that he's in as well. I think Pino could do okay. You know, they rode a very good team time
absolutely.
Trial, and I think as long as his head's still okay after the time that he lost in the time trial, in the crosswinds rather, I think he could do all right.
Well, the interesting thing is it'll be a kind of a summary of the tour itself, actually. Normally, I mean, you know, if all the contenders were there, we would have predicted, Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin, you know, smashing the field, you know, tomorrow, but they're not there.
Well, we look forward to tomorrow, don't we?
Well, let's just look back to last night and the first delicious dish of cassoulet that I enjoyed on this Tour de France in the Place du Capitole in the centre of Toulouse. I would say it was a good quality cassoulet. It had a nice sprinkling of breadcrumbs on the top and some greenery on the top, just some herbs chopped onto the top. I'm not sure that counts as one of my five a day vegetables, but
carrots.
Yeah, there were carrots in there.
Yeah, controversial carrots.
Yeah, I even said to put carrots in cassoulet is like having a Dutch rider riding for a movie star. But
the goose and the sausage were both very good. The beans were nice and soft. My only slight note to the chef would be that the juice was just a little bit thin. Could perhaps have done with another 45 minutes in the oven to take on a little bit more of that fat and bean goodness.
Well, if you're listening, chef, that's for free. That's for nothing from Lionel Burney, the cassoulet gourmand.
Just to point out quickly,
King of the cassoulet.
Yeah, we arrived in Bagnères de Bigorre, as the name implies, Bagnères meaning bath. This is a thermal city, so famous for its waters. That's why we left, and we're on our way. Near Pau, actually. Tonight.
Two nights in Pau. Well, just outside Pau. We better get on the road because we've got a restaurant booking. Before we go, just once again, our thank yous to some friends of the podcast. Tonight, well, we've had a few questions asking how we select the names. It's done pretty much at random, but I usually just look up a date. I think we've done some from December when we launched the Friends program, some from January, some from the start of this tour and during this tour. But we're trying to just pick them at random. But tonight's friends of the podcast who we're going to thank, they're all people who are members of our Facebook discussion group. If you'd like to join that, then do so
search
through Facebook, and you've got to answer a couple of questions.
Yeah, to prove they're genuine.
To prove that you really do listen to the podcast.
But if they're listening to this message, then obviously they're listening.
If you got this far, yeah. So thank you to Gary Hibbert, Ross Jeffries, Mark Guthrie, Goran Raven, and Steve Trice.
Yeah, you actually yielded to pressure there, Richard, because on that group, some mentioned they were not being cited, but never mind. Which was the last year? Kirsty Nutt, Kevin O'Hagan, Tim Phillips, Claire Hung, Luke Beatty, Paddy Dunn, Stuart Brown.
And thank you to Steve Dickinson, Ben Jensen, Richard Wise, Julie Gill, Nick Atkin, Graham Loughman, and Mark Ng. I hope that's right, Mark. We've met before, but I'm not entirely certain. The pronunciation police might be waiting just round this corner. Please let me know whether I got that right or wrong, Mark.
Thank you, gentlemen, and we'll be back tomorrow night. Thank you, Francois.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.